Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
You are tuned to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link program. Time check in Germany is 8:05, and in West Africa, it is 7:05. And a good morning to you all wherever you're listening from. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up, the German branch of the Red Cross official opens an Ebola treatment center in Liberia. We hear from our correspondent.
This is a facility that will be hosting people who have contracted the Ebola virus, and it is coming at a time when Liberia is making significant gains in terms of containing the Ebola virus.
A bomb blast hits Gombe in northeastern Nigeria. This rescue worker describes the casualties after the blast.
We have recorded 20 dead, again 20 seriously critically injured, and then 40 that have received medicine and then dressings.
These stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The German Red Cross will today officially inaugurate its first Ebola treatment center in Liberia's capital, Monrovia. The center, which was built with funds from the German government, has been open to the public for a week now. The Red Cross has placed 15 of its volunteers at the facility, plus 27 additional staff from the German army, the Bundeswehr. This team will treat Ebola patients and also help train local nurses at the center. Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is expected to be the chief guest at the ceremony. DW's Julius Kanuba spoke to my colleague Assumpta Latus on the significance of the center.
Well, it is significant in the sense that this is a facility that will be hosting people who have contracted the Ebola virus, and it is coming at a time when Liberia is making significant gains in terms of containing the Ebola virus. And so this is an important contribution by the German government. And from what we have been told, German medical personnel will be deployed at this facility to run this facility and to treat people who contract Ebola.
We know that President Sirleaf is among those people to bless the event. Who else is expected to attend?
Well, when I spoke with the German embassy, they confirmed that President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf might be attending. That's the word they actually use. And other dignitaries from the national government here and international partners will grace this particular occasion, especially from the UN systems, the World Health Organization, this UN Emergency Ebola Response Team. And so these are people that we expect to attend this program. And members of the local community, because the facility is located in Paynesville, outside the Liberian capital. So we expect for community dwellers to attend this program and see that they have got an Ebola center. And as Samta, interestingly, this facility is built near the Chinese Ebola center. And so perhaps Liberia is blessed to have many international partners, friendly governments and countries contributing significantly to fighting Ebola.
Have you ever had a chance to talk to Liberians about this center? And if yes, what do they say?
Well, no, I've not really spoken to people about this new effort by Germany. But in the past, Liberians have been appreciative of the fact that Germany is one of the countries contributing financially to fighting Ebola in Liberia. And through the German humanitarian organizations also, Liberians have been able to laud the efforts of Germany. But with regards to this center, besides the dedication program, not much is really known about this center. So perhaps with the dedication, yeah, many persons will now come to the full realization that besides the financial contribution by Germany, indeed Germany has got something on the ground that they can count as a tangible efforts on the part of the German government.
Julius Kanuba in Monrovia. Now to Sierra Leone, where the government announced a ban on parties and other activities during the Christmas and New Year holiday. This is among measures introduced to cut down the risk of Ebola transmission. The disease has killed at least 6,500 people so far. Sierra Leone is the worst affected country among the three West African states that include Guinea and Liberia. For reactions on the ban, Assumpta Lattus spoke to Samuel Bojon, Assistant Director of the Don Bosco Mission in Sierra Leone.
We need to get the record straight. The government is not really banning. The government is only asking that the Christmas on year activity must be observed in a low-key.
So what are you saying is that this is not going to impact in any way your operations?
It will. It will affect. In fact, it has already affected a lot of movement, a lot of activities in the city. On a regular day, business activity ends at 6. And on Sunday, no business activity at all. What does that mean? In fact, people are of the opinion that it creates more problem because of the desperation to get out stuff, goods, during this period, and because they know that the time is limited, so more people are going out during these rush hours. So rush hours is throughout, especially at this festival period. For us also, it affects our children so much. You know, we work initially with 3 children. It's now that we are really working now on the Ebola surviving cases. But simultaneously, we still work with. So all the 3 children are afraid to be out there because they are being chased by the police and all the rest of it. In fact, as I speak, I just got a call that some of my boys are there in the police cells that I have to go and secure their release. So it affects our operation as an entity. It affects every little facet of the Sierra Leone society.
Some people say that the ban is an infringement of freedom of religion. So what is your take on this?
Of course, definitely it could be an infringement. But what happened is that the people of Sierra Leone are really tired. They are fed up. They want to see that this issue of Ebola is brought to a logical conclusion. So whatever strategy the government may choose to bring this epidemic into a logical conclusion, I think people may welcome it.
Is Sierra Leonean government doing enough to stop the spread of Ebola virus in Sierra Leone?
I believe they have stepped up. Initially, they were not doing much. But now I'm of the conviction that they are doing enough now. This outbreak started in May 25. During that period, there was not much was done until when the first doctor died, Dr. Khan, that the government chose to come up and step up or react and made it known to the international community.
Samuel Bojon of the Don Bosco Mission speaking from Freetown to my colleague Assumpta Lattus.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
2 bombs exploded on Monday in northeastern Nigeria, leaving dozens dead and many others injured. The first explosion happened at an overcrowded bus station in Gombe Town, northeastern Nigeria, killing at least 20 people. The station is a transit point to several routes, including Bajoka, a town where Boko Haram recently launched an attack. Gombe State shares its borders with Adamawa, Borno, and Yobe, the 3 states in the northeast that have been worst affected by Boko Haram's insurgency. Mohammed Alamin traveled to the scene of the attack in Gombe Town and sent this report.
Rescue workers have been rushing victims of the Teshanduku's bomb blast, including women and children, to the Federal Teaching Hospital and Gombe Specialists for medical attention. Abubakar Yakubu Gombe was one of the rescue workers. He is the branch secretary of Red Cross in Gombe State.
We experienced an explosion in Dukumoto Park, which we call Teshanduku, which so many lives were lost and people were injured seriously. We have recorded 20 dead, again 20 seriously injured, and then critically injured, and then 40 that have received medicine and then dressings.
The popular Dukumoto Park in Gombe Town is usually a busy area as passengers traveling to all the 11 local government area of the states and the neighboring states of Yobe and Borno have to go through the park. Fuaja Atajri, the spokesman of the Gombe State Police Command, described the situation as unfortunate.
This particular incident was quite unfortunate, and we are assuring the general public that we will double our effort and ensure that such thing does not occur in the future. And of course, we are equally pleading with the general public to collaborate with the police and furnish us with information. We have just commenced investigation, and I don't want to preempt the investigators. Once they unravel whatever they have found out, we will present that to you in the future.
This is the third explosion in motor park in Gombe within 2 months. Some blame government security forces for the recurrence of such explosion in the motor parks. But Mr. Attajiri said security is everybody's business.
The police cannot do this alone. We need the general public to furnish us with information. In Gombe State, he has been building a people-friendly police. And of course, that has given us enormous results. Just last week, a vehicle loaded with 10 cylinders of improvised explosive device. We were intercepted by the joint team of the police and army in Bajoga. They were removed to safety without any problem.
Nigeria is set to hold a general election on February 14, but relentless bloodshed has raised security concern ahead of the poll, with some warning that voting may be impossible in large parts of the northeast.
Mohamed Alamin reporting from northeastern Nigeria, and you're listening to Africa Link, coming to you straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany.
Africa on the move.
In our Africa on the Move segment for this week, we meet a young Ghanaian inventor, Asidu Abdu. He is 29 years old and holds a degree in mechanical engineering. Asidu has invented a host of products ranging from spyware cameras to cordless mobile chargers. Now, his new invention is a machine that can prepare one of Ghana's popular dishes, fufu. Isaac Kalechi in Accra caught up with Asidu, and he starts by demonstrating how the fufu machine works.
Asidu Abudu's fufu machine helps many households and food vendors prepare the popular dish at a faster rate with less human effort by taking over the task of pounding the ingredients. But that's only one of Asidu's inventions.
Oh, right now I have more than 20 or 30 inventions. I'm one of those who can design hidden cameras. And I did this one to a torchlight that you can use to listen to a voice. I did a remote control. Every TV remote control you can use to listen to somebody's voice.
29-year-old Asidu now runs his own company called the Foresight Investments Limited. He told me he began inventing at the tender age of 6. The mechanical engineer graduate from the Takoradi Technical Institute in Western Ghana soon found himself in the limelight.
In the school time at GSS, they said they should do craft work. In 1995, they said they are going to have some exhibition at Accra, Kidafest. So they selected me from Western region to go and exhibit my product at National Theatre. So they select all the 10 regions, and you met at Accra. After the exhibition, I was the first person. So I have a chance to visit United States at 96. I went to New York and Chicago.
Since returning to Ghana in 1996, Asidu was energized to intensify his inventions.
In Ghana, you have so many things. Let's talk about our electricity system. And listen, I've designed this new system called cordless power. When I'm talking about cordless power, it's almost like, let's say you are having some program outside your house. You have to pull out a wire out to the place. So I decided to design a cordless. You have a Bluetooth work with your mobile phone. So the cordless power also works like the Bluetooth. You put the socket over at the place that you're going to have your program, and you put that sensor in your room. So when you on the switch in your room, the power will go straight to the socket without any wire.
Asidu says it hasn't been easy turning his dreams into reality. A major challenge has been to get funding and to persuade the Ghanaian authorities to believe in what he does and support him so he can go into mass production.
It's not easy because Ghana, if you want to come with some technology, you have to go to buy some materials, you need, and you have to get somebody to also help you. But Ghana, you don't have something like that. Ghana, if you want to do something, nobody will care for you. Because let's talk about this system I'm doing now. If you start doing mass production in Ghana here, most of the Ghanaian boys will get work to do. And if I used to produce this cordless power for the whole world, you see the benefit that Ghana is going to get.
Many Ghanaians who have used Asidu's products are impressed by the high quality. Mary Jane Fee is a university student.
Well, I know Asidu very well. He did a cordless socket for my friend and I at our hostel. The cordless is very innovative. It has a Bluetooth device on it, and my roommate and I can charge our devices, our phones, our laptops within range.
Another beneficiary of Asidu's inventions is Kweku Dazi. He feels proud of the young inventor.
Interesting. I was having fufu as God is love the other day with one of my boys. And someone said, Charlie, you won't believe this, but the machine that was used to pound this fufu was made by someone who lives here in Takoradi, who is from here in Takoradi, and I did not believe it.
Asidu started his business with 1,000 euros, but he says he needs much more capital to expand his work and produce on a larger scale.
That was Isaac Kalechi reporting from Accra. Let's now head to Rwanda, where cargo transporters from neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo are not happy with authorities at Rwanda's main inland port for what they said were unnecessary delays to clear their goods. The transporters say because of these delays, they end up incurring losses and are not able to deliver goods to their clients in time. Flora Kaitesi in Kigali went to find out and sent this report.
This is Majirwa, Rwanda's inland port. All imported goods into the country are cleared here by the Rwanda Revenue Authority. The inland port also serves as the transit route for cargo being transported to Rwanda's neighbors, the Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi. However, frustration is brewing at this port, especially from Congolese transporters ferrying goods to Congolese towns like Goma. But it is a different case for these transporters who say their goods are subjected to exaggerated inspection. I found Constance Mangaza and Solange Musisi, Congolese businesswomen, waiting for their goods to be inspected.
When they are conducting the inspection, sometimes they skip some people and inspect others. It's very disappointing. There's a man I know who spent 10 days here and vowed never to have his goods transported through Rwanda.
We bring goods in cartons with different products, and sometimes they are mixed in different cartons. But when we get to Rwanda, we are forced to separate the goods. Sometimes they ask me what is in the cartons, and because they are mixed, I may forget, and say they are shoes. And during the inspection, they find clothes, and then they claim that they are smuggled goods. And we are fined $1,300 for that.
In normal circumstances, cargo handling, inspection and clearance is not supposed to exceed 48 hours, according to Majirwa's cargo handling and clearance regulations. Florence Umutesi, one of the inspectors, says that this kind of search is not unique to Congolese transporters and claimed that Rwandan importers are also subjected to the same treatment if they are suspected of lying about the contents of their cargo.
Goods traveling to Congo arrive here just like the Rwandan ones, so we have to offload them and reload the containers within 3 hours. And sometimes you find that the accompanying documents indicate 100 cartons, but when you count them, they are 200.
Rwanda Revenue Authority, Rwanda's tax body, says that the extensive inspection of cargo is sparked by an emerging trend of Rwanda becoming a dumping ground for smuggled goods, which are not cleared by customs. Rafael Tujirumuremnyi is the authority's commissioner for customs services.
Sometimes when we are making controls, we find out that some items are not declared. And we have been facing the problem of dumping in this country where the excess and then the vehicle that was used in carrying such a goods is also seized. And then the driver who was involved in such a smuggling of goods is also fined the amount of $10,000.
Ferrying goods via Rwanda from the port of Dar es Salaam and Mombasa is the shortest route to arrive in the towns of Goma and Bukavu in the DRC. However, such complaints have become widespread only recently owing to cases of smuggling.
Flora Kaitesi reporting.
Making a difference.
In Making a Difference this week, we head to Malawi, where a group of innovative women have found an alternative way of farming. They are also promoting this new of growing crops, which will leave the soil fertile after harvest. The model is in line with government's call for farmers to adopt conservation and climate-smart agriculture. George Muhango reports from Blantyre.
Alice Kachele lives in Nyanja, the outskirts of Lilongwe, close to a district that borders Malawi and Zambia on the western part of the country. Half of her life, the mother of three, has lived complaining about her poor condition she has been living in. The little Didikachiri had was a small portion of unfertile land. Unlike her colleagues who belonged to a farming association, she never took farming as a tool that could transform her livelihood. But a meeting on sustainable land and water management, including conservation agriculture, which she unwillingly attended, changed her farming methods and her life as well.
I have already benefited from farming business. Firstly, now my mindset was changed to become a business farmer, a business mind, because from a mud house, what I have in the past, now I built my house roofed with iron sheets and I managed to send my children to school.
Christopher Basiao works in the Ministry of Agriculture, where her role is to provide training to farmer clubs, where small farmers like Kachere do take part.
During the training sessions, what we do normally is, in this conservation, agriculture is to protect the soil. Our view is that the principle of managing the topsoil to create a permanent organic soil cover can allow for growth of organisms within the soil structure. The breaking down of this mulch will produce a high organic matter level, which will act as fertilizer for the soil surface. And lastly, the third is practice of crop rotation with more than two species. Crop rotation can be used best as a disease control against other preferred crops.
By using these new farming methods, Kachere, who has only 1 hectare of land, is now cultivating crops twice a year. She grows maize, beans, and pigeon peas.
We are doing soil cover and planting trees that adds more nutrients in our soil. For example, Gracilia and Insango.
Kachere is one of the many farmers in Malawi who are now venturing into sustainable farming, which is known as conservation and climate smart agriculture. Three key principles are to be followed when adopting this kind of farming. Chisomo Gwananda is one of those environmental and agricultural campaigners.
One of them is practicing minimal machinery, soil disturbance, and non-tilling farming, which is essential to maintaining minerals within the soil, stopping erosion, and preventing water loss from occurring within the soil.
According to a report by the New Partnership for Africa's Development, NEPAD, the effects of climate change are becoming more frequent and more severe, threatening productivity of agriculture. This aggravates further the already extreme levels of poverty.
George Muhango reporting, and Making a Difference will be back the same time next week. And before we leave you, here's a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. German Red Cross official opens an Ebola treatment center in Monrovia today. Two bombs exploded on Monday in northeastern Nigeria, leaving dozens of people dead and many more injured. No group has claimed responsibility yet, but all fingers are pointing to the usual suspects, Boko Haram. We've also been hearing from Congolese cargo transporters who claim Rwandan authorities at the country's inland port take longer than necessary to clear their goods and hence incurring losses. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. For comments and suggestions, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160957595510. The email is feedback.africa@dw.de. And I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, wishing you a pleasant day ahead.